PR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, Sullivan County's Communications Director Dan Hoos joins us live with updates on three big stories: why sales tax revenues are running behind last year's pace, where things stand with the county's search for a waste-to-energy partner, and what's next for the Gateway Housing Center in Monticello now that a site has been identified and an engineer's report is on the way. Coming up, The Overlook is out with its latest edition and covering everything from a heated debate in Woodstock to growing healthcare gaps in rural New York to a debut novel that brushes up against Bob Dylan's legacy. We'll talk with The Overlook editor-in-chief, Noah Eckstein. And the latest episode of our theater podcast, Curtain Call with Tom Candela. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump says he has a high degree of certainty that the suspect wanted in the killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk is in custody. Trump told Fox and Friends the suspect was identified by someone who knew him, who told the suspect's father.
Somebody that was very close to him said, that's him. And essentially went to the father, went to a U.S. Marshal, who was fantastic, by the way. And the person was involved with law enforcement, but was a person of faith, a minister. And brought him to a U.S. Marshal, who was fantastic. And the father convinced the son, this is it.
Trump says he hopes the suspect is convicted and put to death. Meanwhile, officials from the FBI and Utah authorities are expected to hold a news conference this hour. Missouri Senate is expected to pass a measure today that redraws the state's congressional maps. Republicans want to try to send another GOP member to the U.S. Congress. Republican lawmakers also want to make it a lot harder for citizens to amend the state constitution. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum reports.
Missouri Republicans want to require any constitutional amendment put on the ballot through the initiative petition process to pass in a statewide vote and in all eight congressional districts. State Senator Brad Hudson says the Constitution is too easy to amend. Missourians recently passed amendments protecting abortion rights, legalizing marijuana, and expanding Medicaid, which won with support in cities but not rural areas.
I think you should have broad consensus throughout the state of Missouri before you amend the Constitution.
Detractors of the plan say it will make it basically impossible for most amendments to pass. If lawmakers pass it this week, it will go to the voters for their approval. For NPR News, I'm Jason Rosenbaum in St. Louis.
Stocks opened mixed this morning after hitting record highs yesterday. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 70 points in early trading.
The company once known as Restoration Hardware could use a little restoration after a disappointing earnings report. RH lowered its forecast for annual results, pointing to the fallout from President Trump's tariffs. The Treasury Department says those import taxes raised $30 billion last month, a nearly fourfold increase from a year ago. But tariffs are also contributing to higher prices on furniture, clothing, and other imports. Microsoft has resolved an antitrust investigation brought by European regulators after software rival Slack complained about the company's Teams product. Microsoft will not have to pay a fine, but agreed to unbundle Teams from its suite of Office software. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 77 points. The Nasdaq is up nearly 40 points. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. There's a curfew in effect in Nepal. Leaders of the protest movement that toppled the country's prime minister this week have held talks with Nepalese military leaders. At least 34 people were killed in the violence. The protest broke out after the government banned all social media. The ban was quickly rescinded, but the protests ballooned into widespread violence. 9 months after reopening from the devastating 2019 fire, Notre Dame Cathedral has become the most visited monument in France. It's overtaking the Louvre, Versailles, and the Eiffel Tower. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports the cathedral is on track to welcome nearly 13 million visitors in its first year since reopening last December.
The majority of visitors after the French have come from the U.S., Latin America, and Asia. They're particularly impressed by the cathedral's immaculate white stone, which has been sucked clean of centuries of grime. Chinese visitors have discovered a special surprise. One of the 14 side chapels around the nave has been renamed in honor of St. Paul Chen, a Chinese seminarian martyred in 1861, whose body has been kept at Notre Dame since 1920. A chapel dedicated to Christians of the East has also been introduced, joining existing chapels devoted to the Virgin of Guadalupe and the Virgin of Częstochowa from Poland. A spokesperson for the cathedral says they all reinforce Notre Dame's universal mission. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
And this just in, Utah Governor Spencer Cox says Utah authorities have arrested a suspect in the killing of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. It's NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Happy Friday. And on Fridays, we hear from Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. And there he is. How are you, sir?
Fiddling with the microphone here that just wanted to fall down on me.
Good morning, and thanks for being here. Wanted to start off with just a mention of a moment of silence held yesterday for 9/11 across the county and at the legislature. Mm-hmm. And that you are honoring that memory, as yeah. everyone is. At this time, the 24th anniversary, believe it or not. Yeah. Also, the legislature went into a lot of different topics. We want to get into some of the bigger stories. One of them is that waste to energy plant. There's a request for proposal for that, and it's under review. What's the latest on that RFP?
That it's, as you said, actually, that it's under review. Some of the proposals have come in. I don't believe though the RFP process has ended yet. I think that may be as late as next month, and then people will get a better understanding of what proposals have been received, and legislators will start talking about it, considering it. It is something, of course, there already is a movement by some residents who feel that there should not even be a consideration of waste to energy, that it's a, pardon the pun, a waste of time and resources. But legislators at this point are still interested in reviewing their options. Doesn't mean there is any commitment to a waste to energy plant at this point. I want to make that clear. There will be a lot of hoops to jump through, a lot of public comment periods. And let's say even if everything got approved and moved forward, we're talking 5 to 10 years before anything would even be built and operating. And that's a long time, even in government where it takes a long time.
Yeah, and waste to energy is also sometimes referred to as an incinerator.
Yeah, it is.
There are some people in the public who are opposed to that. Are you hearing from the public here at these meetings
far? Yeah, there's several folks who consistently come and talk about how they're concerned about the pollution. Legislators, including the chair of the Public Works Committee, Joe Perrello, have been to an incinerator down in the heart of Long Island, actually, in probably the densest section of it next to what I know as the Roosevelt Mall. But some people may remember it's right near the place Charles Lindbergh took off for his transatlantic flight. Just a little useless trivia there. But anyway, they are operating within DEC and EPA regulations. But of course, the company that operates them is going to be interested in citing one up here. So some residents are saying they're going to put their best foot forward and not show you the darker side or whatever. Well, legislators are interested in seeing and hearing about all of it. It's just a little early in the process for them to be making a decision one way or the other.
And this is part of a plan exploration to address the problem with waste in the county, and yes. What will happen later. It is one of the options that's being discussed.
Well, and not even necessarily an either or kind of proposition. There are other things being actively pursued. For example, a composting facility where we would actually take in all your organic wastes and compost them and then turn them into material that we could sell right there. Right now, we take organic waste, but we ship them off to a place in Ulster County, and they reap the benefits of it. And we're like, we want to keep that in-house and encourage people to do that. Plus, there are also ways to reduce your disposal. That really is one of the first things that people can do, is to advocate with your state and federal legislators about reducing the amount of, for example, packaging. I mean, you and I probably both have gotten things from some shippers. It's like, it needed this much plastic and cardboard and other things. It doesn't need that much. We need to actively, as individuals, pursue reducing our waste stream as well, because that's a key part of it. And it will not only, as they say, save the planet, it'll save us money.
Other news out of the legislature in Monticello, the Gateway Housing Center. There's been a site identified by the county. Can you tell us more about that site?
I can't get into specifics about the particular site other than that it's in Monticello. There is discussion going on with the property owner to see if there would be an ability to reach an agreement for the county to, I don't know if it would be a lease or outright purchase of the property. But it's a location that I think legislators are very interested in because it's within walkable distance to a lot of the services and businesses in Monticello. And now it's really a matter of figuring out what agreement can be reached. And as soon as I can be more specific about it, I would love to be.
What's the next step on this? There's an engineering report.
There's an engineer's report that is due at the end of this month, according to our Commissioner of Public Works, Ed McAndrew. He told that to the legislature yesterday. And once we understand the building, we can have a more direct and precise conversation with the property owner. But at this point, the property owner is interested in seeing where this goes. So
will this, without identifying, I suppose, will this property help alleviate the numbers that you're seeing in terms of the unhoused in the area?
To some degree, yes. I mean, we're talking about something that probably still could only take 20. That's at least what I've heard. Maybe it could accommodate more. So it'll make a little dent in it. We still have, I think, over 100 homeless in the county. But it's part of an overall plan to get people out of hotels and motels, which is what we've been doing largely over the past few decades.
And we've talked about this before, how this would help, or there's grant money at the state level that would help with some of this. Will this still qualify? Will the county still qualify for that grant funding?
Not for this grant cycle. That was made fairly clear yesterday, that because of needing to wait for the engineer's report and then what would be necessary after an agreement was reached with the property owner to go ahead and apply for a grant, which Honor, the operator, not the county, would apply for. It wouldn't happen in time for, I think there was an $8 million grant available this grant cycle, but there's high hopes that that will continue to be available. I think it's been available every year for a few years now, is my understanding. So there's hopes that it will continue to be available. Even if it's not, though, I wouldn't count out that the county will continue to pursue this.
Are there any concerns that the grant money might go away, given all of the other financial pressures for the state with the looming federal cuts?
In a word, yes. Mm. Yeah, I mean, let's be perfectly honest here. That was even mentioned at legislature yesterday. There's a possibility it will not exist next year. But at this point, our DPW commissioner said we can't move any faster than we are. So it's going to be what it's going to be. We'll have to see how that goes into the new year.
Sales tax numbers are trending below this time last year. What is the impact there? Oh,
I keep dropping this microphone. Sorry Mic about drop. That. Yeah, right, but not the way I want to. So, yeah, we have our county treasurer, Nancy Buck, provides a form to legislators and the public every month that as of August, I believe, 2025, we have collected, I mean, this is impressive when you think about it, $46.3 million in sales tax revenue. But at this point in 2024, we had collected over $48 million. So that's nearly $2 million less. And our budget anticipated $80 million by the end of the year. And of course, we've got the holiday season coming up and Halloween and other things people spend a lot of money on that mm-hmm. will collect sales tax. But she has warned that we'll be fortunate if we hit the budgeted amount of $80 million this year. So we definitely have plateaued with sales tax revenue. Now the question is, Will we slide down a lot? And if so, that's going to have budget implications because for, I think, the past couple of years at least, our sales tax revenue has outpaced our property tax revenue, which is what you want. You actually have your property taxes don't have to increase as much because the sales tax is taking up the slack. But also there's other taxes that we collect as well. There's room tax, mortgage tax, and gaming revenue. And that all is slightly up over this time last year. Mortgage tax, $118,000 higher. Room tax, only about $4,500 higher. Gaming revenue is almost $11,000 higher than this time last year. So there's a possibility that everything will sort of work out in the wash, but that still means we have to budget very conservatively and carefully for 2026 and beyond.
Is there any indication as to why the trend line is lower this year versus last year? Any analysis there?
Nothing yet that I have heard. It would only be speculation on my part. But, of course, you know, in COVID, people started shopping like crazy online because you couldn't really go on out. And we have benefited over the past few years of that staying high when other counties saw that fall sooner than we did. So perhaps this is, what do they call it, a market correction? Mm-hmm. But we don't really want that correction at this point. We want it to stay high, obviously.
Rabies remains a concern for the public health department. We heard there was another case of rabies in the county, but also talking about the numbers in other places upstate, some alarming numbers.
Yeah, we had people who were like, gosh, three rabid animals this summer so far. Should we be doing more than we're doing about it? Well, I asked public health that question, and they said, oh, actually, in 2024, there were four positive cases. In 2023, there were two. So we're actually trending right about where we normally are. And rabies is all around us. You're never going to eradicate it or eliminate it entirely. However, upstate, there was they didn't identify the county for me, that there were 15 in 1 week. Erie County, which is Buffalo, already has 21 cases reported in 2025. Now, that's a much more urban area than here, and maybe that is why, because people are more prone to interact with wild animals in an urban suburban setting. But it is something that we take seriously. It's just not something where people need to hit the panic button and say, my gosh, I'm never letting my pets outdoors again. What you need to do is come to our next free rabies vaccination clinic open to anyone in Sullivan County as a dog, cat, or ferret, October 8th, 6 to 7:30 at the Monticello Firehouse.
Also, talking about getting ready for winter, the warming centers that are provided throughout the county, those are getting contracts approved for the operators. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, those contracts will be approved in next week. They were tentatively approved yesterday with St. John's Episcopal Church, the Federation for the Homeless, which really is going to be helping run the St. John's Episcopal Church outreach, and then Liberty United Methodist Church. So we'll still have the two warming centers. Federation for the Homeless provides a place during the day, but not overnight. These will be, last I knew, the plan is to continue 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., believe starting in December, although it might be earlier than that if the weather turns cold quick. And then that'll be running. Usually it runs through mid-April so that people who need it, and people do, have a place, a warm place to spend the night. And usually we can give them some food as well. Once 8 a.m. comes along, then there's other places that they can go to, like local libraries or places that would allow folks to spend a larger amount of time during the day. And of course, if there's real serious situations where we're concerned that these folks don't or won't have any place to go to, then we find housing for them through social services.
And a good time to remind folks about the HEAP benefit for this winter, and a slight change there.
Because of federal cuts, the state will not have the money to give us for all the extra HEAP benefits. I don't know that we should call them extra, but clean and tune, repair your furnace, that kind of thing. All it's going to be this year is the basic HEAP benefit, which, listen, can give people up to like $900 to pay for their fuel bill per season. I imagine there'll also be an emergency HEAP benefit that comes into play usually around January, February. This will open up in November. I'll be putting out a press release about it. But if you've gotten it in the past, you probably will be contacted directly by our HEAP office, which is a wonderful office, has great people in it who want to get you the benefits that more people are eligible for than they realize.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. We'll take a quick break and come back with more, including the tax foreclosure auction that's coming up. And the latest on the Sullivan County Airport. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last week on Wait, Wait, we provided a model of reasoned debate.
Well, you shut up.
No, you shut up.
You shut up. No, you
this
shut
is
up.
The good you old day. Up.
There we go.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for a respectful back and forth with legendary sportscaster Bob Costas on this week's Wait, Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle, you can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
It's Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're talking with Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday for an update from Monticello. Wanted to talk about this tax foreclosure auction, which is coming up the 15th through the 17th. These are basically lots and buildings that have been abandoned by their owners, and they owe you some back taxes, so they're up for auction.
Yep. And most of it is abandoned. Some of it has been folks who have been unable to pay their taxes, but most of our treasurer's office, run by Nancy Buck, works very hard to make sure that if you want to keep your property, if you're dealing with us honestly and in good faith, we will do everything we can, including installment payments, to help you keep your property. We do not like taking property. And in years past, we used to have tax auctions that had over 300 or more properties up for auction. They've worked so hard on it. Now it's down to just 108 this year. And that's usually what we've been averaging, which again shows to me that they are working as hard as they can to allow people to stay in their properties. But we have those 100 properties that are going up for auction starting at 10 a.m. on Monday the 15th, running through 10 a.m. on Wednesday the 17th. It is an online-only auction, nothing in person. You can find it at nysauctions.com. It's, I think, the very first thing on their list because it's the next auction coming up. All bids, no matter the size of the property, from what I can tell, all bids start at $100. And there's more information on there. Of course, it is buyer beware. Just make sure you know what it is that you're...
Right. And then Nancy Buck has a warning for interested buyers, too, to make sure that they are... it's an online auction, but you really should check out what you're bidding on.
Yeah. She says, do your homework. Personally, view the property. Check for outstanding liens and assessments like water and sewer. It's not just back taxes that are going to be owed on this property. And be familiar with terms and conditions, particularly those taxes and those fees you're immediately responsible for upon the placement of a successful bid. Every year, there's a couple or a few more folks who have not done their homework and they cannot end up purchasing the property. And they've wasted their time and they've wasted ours. Don't do that.
Because even if you get it for $100, you're responsible for all the back taxes immediately. Yes. And all the other stuff.
It may still be a good deal, sure, but it's not going to just be $100 that you get any property for.
You know, I drive by one of those properties that was in the last auction that someone got. I don't know how much they got it for, but they fixed it up. And it's nice to see like this nice little house there now. So there can be some benefits to that.
Yeah.
Also, I'm mentioning to folks about the latest at the Sullivan County Airport. So the technical ownership of the airport is today?
That's my understanding, is that baton is being handed to the county today. We've been buttoning up a few last punch list items, and now we're just working with the state and trying to figure out. We've had a few different dates that have been bouncing around. Nothing has worked for everybody yet to have a ribbon cutting for it, because we want state level officials there, lots of county officials. I'm hoping to invite the public as long as I'm allowed to, but the state's running the show, so I can't promise that, but I'd like to have the public there because it will be open to the public. It's a wonderful facility that we can rightfully be proud of.
And the that when the baton's being passed, then that means it's completed, that things are finished.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
And open to the public means, again, not commercial flights for the public.
Yeah, I mean, the building will be something that you can access. There'll be a restaurant in there. We're still working on getting a restaurateur for that, so I don't think they'll be there the moment that it's open to the public. But there'll be offices in there, and it's not going to be something fenced off like the rest of the airport is, naturally, for security. It's going to be a public terminal building. But when we talk about terminal, yes, I've had to repeat this many, many times to folks. We're not talking about scheduled passenger airline service. Stewart Airport, which is our closest one, they already struggle with that. We're not going to try to repeat those kinds of issues that we did it 50 years ago. It was difficult. So this is going to be to attract corporate jet traffic and also places for them to have offices and hangar space so that we can have this not be subsidized by the taxpayers, but actually have it be paid for by the business that it generates, which will save taxpayers money.
Also, another building news, the roof of the government center annex getting replaced. What does that mean for folks who might be coming there?
Yep. Starting today, we have blocked off a portion of the parking lot that is closest off Sturgis Road to our probation and family court offices. Now, everyone has had to be going in since we put in the new scanning equipment in the main entrances of the government center anyway. But because this has taken a number of handicap mark spaces and non-handicap mark spaces, we wanted people to be aware that we had to do that so that we put materials there and also work safely on the roof without endangering anybody. However, just down from there are the electric car hookups. Those are still available.
There's a new director of nursing at the care center.
Yes.
And also another new employee there too.
Yes, a director of nursing, an assistant director of nursing. Yes, so ADON. Sorry, I did the acronym. I shouldn't have done
that. You did the acronym, but I didn't get it. I was like, ADON. What is
ADON? Yeah, ADON, you know, like mafia. No, our fairly new care center administrator, Kay Sean, introduced them to the legislature yesterday. It's Robert Bertoloff, who comes, I believe, from the Roscoe Nursing Home. A lot of people already knew him ahead of time. He's our director of nursing, and then his right hand person, his assistant director of nursing, her name is Helene Duvall. I think I'm pronouncing that right, Helene. I apologize if I'm not. I just met both of them yesterday myself. They are great people. They are very eager to render the best service that can be rendered at our care center, and I wanted people to know who these folks were, and if they want to meet them, feel free when you go to the care center to ask, I'd like to meet Robert or Helene, and if they're there, they'll make time for you.
I'd like to meet the Don.
Yeah.
The
Don.
The Office of the Aging has some farmer's market coupons for seniors available still. Oh, you're dropping your mic.
I did it for the third time, but that's the charm, right? So I got to stop hitting my microphone here. So, yes.
When will you get the hang of this?
I don't know. When will this microphone get the hang of this? So our Office for the Aging has gotten a fresh supply of farmer's market coupons. But, of course, we're coming towards the end of farmer's markets, although actually we're in the height of the harvest season right now. So it's a wonderful time to go to your farmer's market. But if you are a Sullivan County resident and over 60 years of age and make no more than, like, in a one-person household, about $2,400 a month, and probably most on a fixed income don't, we have got booklets of $5 coupons for a total of $25 that will get you all the fresh food and produce that you want at these farmer markets. Well, up to $25 worth. Mm-hmm. So it's something to take advantage of because we don't want to be left with any of these by the end of the season, which will be November 30th. We want them all to be gone and used. So talk to us about it. Come to the Office for the Aging office in the Government Center or give a call to 807-0241.
Reminder of a few events coming up. There's a POW MIA ceremony coming up on Friday next week.
Yeah, week from today, 1 o'clock. We do this every year through our Veterans Service Agency. It is an extremely moving ceremony. Very short, but it has often had me tear up because it's a missing man table that's set where it's an empty chair with plates and dishes and silverware on it that all have a specific meaning in memory of POWs and MIAs who never came home and are still missing in action or possibly are still prisoners.
That's next Friday, the 19th, at the Government Center at
1 o'clock. Yep.
And guided walks on the D&H and O&W trails are coming up next weekend or in a couple weeks?
Actually, yes. We have two different ones that are happening. They are both happening with Karen Barnes, who is a guy from the town of Mamikating, full of history, a delight to walk with. He is just a walking encyclopedia in that way, and I don't think he would mind at all that I'm describing him that way. He is a joy to talk to. He will do two walks, one on Sunday, September 21st at 1 p.m., and the second on Saturday, October 11th at 10 a.m., both starting at our D&H Canal Interpretive Center. It's a little museum in Summitville off Route 209, sits right along the Delaware and Hudson Canal towpath. Karen will also be talking, though, about the O&W, the Ontario and Western Railway, which passed through the area, in fact, had a major junction point in Summitville. And it's a 2-mile easy flat walk along both trails. The events are free.
And finally, if you missed it, the Firefighters Parade in Monticello, available for viewing on your social media page. It's always a big event.
Yes, I walked all the way up Broadway with the firefighters, tried to stay out of their way, mostly able to do that. One time they had to tell me, Dan. But I wanted to give a You Were There in-person live stream of it that has now been archived on our social media. It's a full hour and 10 minutes, but unlike the live stream, you can actually fast forward to any part you want to see, but we capture everybody who was in the parade. It was wonderful to be at, and thankfully the weather turned nice just as it started.
Will we see you in it?
No, you'll hear me in it, though. Everyone says, Dan, so there were people making comments on who's Dan?
He's Dan Hoost, everybody, communications director for the Sullivan County government. Thank you so much, sir. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure. You too.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, controversy in Woodstock, healthcare gaps in rural New York, and a new novel with a surprising Bob Dylan connection. That's all in the latest edition of The Overlook. We'll talk to the editor-in-chief, Noah Eckstein, next. This is Radio Chatsco.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at CatskillsPropertyCare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This week on Science Friday, why scientists are rethinking what we know about octopuses' 8 arms.
Could it be that certain arms are specialized for certain functions?
Plus, our obsession with finding alien life goes way back.
2,500 years ago, you see this idea that all of these planets and stars and things, they might actually be physical places.
It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Joined now by Noah Eckstein, the editor-in-chief of The Overlook, to talk about some of the top stories in their latest edition. The Ulster County District Attorney's attempt to cool tensions in Woodstock has only added new questions to an already heated dispute over the town supervisor's controversial decision involving a convicted sex offender. A report on how rural New Yorkers, including those in Ulster and Greene counties, are facing widening gaps in access to health care. And a feature on Sam Sussman's debut novel, which explores themes of family and identity and the shadow of Bob Dylan's legacy. Noah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's start in Woodstock. There's been a really emotional and divisive issue for the town, which we have discussed before. Your reporting shows that instead of calming things down, the DA may have stirred the pot even more. For those who have not been following it closely or don't know about it, can you walk us through what's going on and why it's hit such a nerve?
Absolutely. So earlier in the summer, we reported that the Woodstock supervisor, Bill McKenna, hired a level 3 sex offender as a maintenance worker in the town of Woodstock without disclosing that information to the hiring committee, which was comprised of other town board members. The majority of the town board later voted in a town board meeting to fire Anello. And then McKenna, the supervisor, took a grievance from the union, which there's questions if it was a proper grievance filed, but he took that to the county and reinstated the level 3 sex offender into, you know, working for the town. So it's been this back and forth that has ignited the community, many of whom we've learned are former sex offenders, you know, people who've experienced sex crimes or sexual assault in the town. They're coming out and speaking loudly on social media and in person, because this is sort of a re-traumatizing thing. People are very, this has ignited Woodstock. And this past week, the town board had the Ulster County DA, Emmanuel Neji, come, and he tried to cool things down. He really was pleading with the community, citizens, and the town board to bring down the heat, but it's not working. And we learned this week, we broke the news that the town attorney emailed the town board stating that the supervisor exceeded his authority in reinstating the level 3 sex offender. So it is this back and forth that, incrementally each week we're breaking more news on it, but it has the entire community just up in arms.
When the Ulster County DA stepped in, what did he say, and why has it ended up creating more confusion instead of clarity?
He basically said to the community that the power the community has is the ballot box, and that the community should reach out to their town board members with grievances and to the town attorney. Now, people were frustrated with that because seemingly what he was saying is he doesn't have the jurisdiction as Ulster County DA to provide oversight in this matter because no crime has been committed. You know, he talked about the importance of rehabilitating sex offenders and having them, come into the community and work and, you know, that right. But he basically said he has no oversight and that people should reach out to the town attorney. But when I spoke to the town attorney, he said he works for the town board and that really community members who contact him, he's not going to be able to provide that much information. But we confirmed that he did email the town board and said that, you know, McKenna exceeded his authority. But what that means in this day and age and in this time for Woodstock is unclear. It might just mean that, and we continue on. So town board members are trying to figure out their next steps, arbitration, what they're going to do.
Well, we'll talk to you about that as this continues to brew in Woodstock and Ulster County. Let's shift, though, to your reporting on health care, rural health care access. What are some of the biggest hurdles people in rural New York are facing right now when it comes to getting care?
I mean, this is probably no shock to listeners that it is tough to get a doctor's appointment, especially if you're a new patient. So we did some reporting last week that found that there is one OBGYN in the entire county of Greene County. If someone's living in Hunter, New York, or Windham, New York, they have to drive at least an hour to get care, primary care or a hospital. Wait times, if you're lucky, are booking out to November, but we spoke to neurologists in the Albany Medical System who are booking out into February for new patients. So people just don't know what to do, and it is illuminating this thing that many Americans across the country have known, which is the healthcare system is broken.
And our own Kimberly Izar was reporting in Pike County across the river in Pennsylvania doesn't even have a hospital, and they're hoping to finally get one, people having to go out of county for years to get care. How different is the picture in our counties and our region compared to other parts of the state when it comes to provider shortages and hospital cutbacks?
I mean, I think rural New York, upstate New York, is not unique in that it's hard to get a doctor's appointment. And this is something, you know, across the country that people are dealing with. And it just seems like now you need to have some sort of, you know, deep understanding of strategy and logistics when it comes to making an appointment and ensuring that if you have some condition that is confusing or that doctors don't know how to treat, that you need to, you know, just be figuring out when you can get an MRI, when it will be covered with insurance, and they don't teach this stuff. So, you know, we focus solely on Ulster and Greene County, and we just know that people are frustrated, and many of whom are older residents. You know, Greene County skews older than the national average for age, and even people on Medicare are experiencing really tough times. I spoke to one woman a few months ago, and this is something we're going to continue to report because it's so important. She's on Medicare, and she said she hasn't seen a dentist in years because the dentists are like, we can book you for a checkup, a cleaning, in a year's time. So it's just a real issue for many people
across the region. Let's talk about a very different story. Sam Sussman's new novel. It's fiction, but the book raises questions as to whether Bob Dylan might be the narrator's father in the novel. But the heart of the story, as you point out in your coverage, is it's really about his mother. Tell us a little bit more about this.
Yeah, so you know, being the Woodstock paper, we have a deep history with Bob Dylan. For listeners who may not know, he spent a lot of time in Woodstock in the early to mid '60s when his manager Albert Grossman, you know, started the Bearsville complex and lived in Woodstock. So our office is actually the room where Dylan wrote many songs, many classic songs, Subterranean Homesick Blues. So when I found out that Sam Sussman was claiming that perhaps Bob Dylan could be his father and was writing a book about it, we invited him to Woodstock. He came. It was kind of an interesting moment seeing him enter our office and see all these pictures of Bob Dylan, his supposed father. And his voice is so droning like Dylan's. He kind of looks like Dylan with the wiry curly hair. So it was a little eerie. But the book is much more about his relationship with his mother as she was dying of cancer and grief, and sort of her on her deathbed explaining that, hey, maybe, you know, she had a fling, an affair, a relationship with Dylan in the 70s and again in the 90s, sort of right around the time he was conceived.
Yeah, there's I guess the paternity question is unresolved, and that loose end won't get tied up. But it is part of the book there, and if you go to your coverage at theoverlooknews.com, you'll see those photos, and there is a striking resemblance, I will say.
Yeah, it will certainly sell books for him. It's an interesting book. So
I think there's also a review today in the New York Times. But you can read about all these stories and more in the latest edition of The Overlook. Go to theoverlooknews.com and check out all of the great community journalism there. Noah Eckstein is the editor-in-chief of The Overlook. Noah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, it's the latest edition of our theater podcast, Curtain Call. Tom Candela is here with a preview next. This is Radio Chatskill.
On this Old House Radio Hour, before you hire a contractor, listen to ours as we break down what you need to ask before signing anything.
If you see in diagonal cracks, that might mean that the house is shifting a little bit. The worst would be if you see a horizontal crack. That's going to be a pretty major foundation issue.
Plus, New Yorker editor-in-chief David Remnick remembers the Moscow apartment he called home. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Celebrate 35 years of Radio Catskill at the Lou Beach Community House Summer Jubilee. Join us tomorrow from 5 to 8 p.m. for live music from Kala Sun and Lolly and the Pops, and a DJ set by The Mixtape's Jason Dugan, plus cold beer from Catskill Brewery. Tickets are $25 and proceeds benefit Radio Catskill. More information at wjffradio.org. The Lou Beach Community House Summer Jubilee, a project of the Beaverkill Valley Land Trust.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, it's the latest episode of our theater podcast, Curtain Call, with Tom Candela. And Tom is here to share what's on this latest episode that's dropping today. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good. And what are we going to hear about today?
So this episode of Curtain Call, I sat down with comedian, actress, and writer Chanel Ali. Now, she's fairly well known in the comedic stand-up arena area and theater and stuff like that. But she is making her off-Broadway debut with her one-woman show called Relative Stranger. And it's going to be playing at the Soho Playhouse. And it opens on the 17th of this month, just a few days away. And it's a deeply personal work that blends humor with heartbreak. And Chanel, she shares her stories from her childhood in foster care and her mother's struggle with mental illness, and even a shocking discovery of a brother that she didn't know knew she had. And she found that through 23andMe, believe it or not. So
wow.
It's all there in the podcast. It's really amazing.
Blending those themes of, blending her humor and her you know, what she's known for, but with these other revealing parts of it to create this play.
Of her life,
yeah.
You know, true life stuff. So it's about her and her life and growing up in foster care and that sort of thing. But she blends humor into it. But it's a very deeply personal and very, very moving and powerful.
Let's take a listen to Tom Candela in the latest episode of Curtain Call.
Thank you. Today, my guest is Chanel Ali. She's a stand-up comedian, writer, and actress who's making her off-Broadway debut with a bold new one-woman show, Relative Stranger. She was recognized as one of Deadline's 15 comedians to watch. She's appeared on MTV's Girl Code, True TV's Laugh Mob's Laugh Tracks, Star's Night Train, and Netflix's Dash and Lily. Chanel, I want to welcome you to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. And it's a pleasure to have you on. I'm very excited because this is your off-Broadway debut. And that's an exciting time for you. What does it mean to you to now be taking on center stage in your very first off-Broadway production?
I started as a stand-up comedian and studied comedy so intensely for so many years to become really great at it. But I really just have a love for entertaining as a whole. And I was influenced by so many great one-person shows like John Leguizamo's Freak. It was just an incredible autobiographical story. And I always aspired to have a show like that, but I never knew what mine would be about. And then my life got really, really crazy. And I realized this is it. The show is my life because my life is the craziest story I've ever heard.
Well, so what made you decide when you discovered this is about me? What made you decide that this is the right time to share all of that?
Sincerely, again, as an artist, it was because I was so angry. I just had a day where I was looking out the window and I had just got off the phone with my cop dad and I had cussed him out. And I was just so angry that I started to laugh because it's such a wild scenario. I didn't meet my father until I was 18. So I'm trying to find him my whole life. And so finally, when I find him and I unravel more and more truths about what a terrible cop he is, it's just the craziest thing. And I realized that I got to tell everybody about this. This is the feeling that some great stories come from, when you have this passion inside of you that you can't even believe that you survived something.
Right. And so with all that information that you were learning as you went about your dad, and we'll also talk a little bit about a brother that you discovered that you didn't know you had. So what was the process for you? Did you just sit down and say, okay, I'm start typing out ideas? How does it work for you?
Yeah, it started just on my phone. I just opened up the Notes app and I started to tell the story of my life from the beginning. What happened? What was the first crazy thing that happened? And for me, it was when I was two, I was taken away from my mom and I was started moving around into foster care and living with distant relatives. And I didn't know who my father was. And that beginning led me to start to explain more of why that happened, what happened to my mom and why I didn't know who my father was. And how I was able to move to all of these homes and make new relationships, make new friends, and keep a level of humility. And so the process really was, it was really therapeutic, I would say, to just sit down and write it out and then to go back and fill it with jokes and theatrics and all of the good things that make an audience feel something.
But you mentioned the humor and interjecting some humor in there. Now, how do you balance that? Because that's a fine line, right, between comedy and when you're talking about deeply personal material. How do you balance that humor and the drama of it? That must have been a very difficult part of the process for you.
It was very difficult. And in the beginning, when I first started touring with the show, I took it to the Edinburgh Fringe in Scotland. And I didn't have a big budget. So some days I had six people, some days I had four. But after every show, I held a Q&A and I asked them, what is it about parts of the story that were most intriguing to you, that you felt most emotionally connected to? And I balanced the show that way by making fun of these reflections, but also understanding what people wanted to hear about how I actually healed from them instead of just tragedy, tragedy, tragedy. But, right. You know, the calculation for comedy is tragedy and time. It is that. And I'm lucky that I came up with this story and this production at this point in my career where I have the skills to reflect on it and tell it in a way that has balance. And it is a roller coaster. Audiences laugh and then they cry and they laugh and then they cry and then they come out and they feel rejuvenated because they can't even believe what roller coaster they just took with me. But that's life. Life is good and bad. It's a blessing to live. It's a blessing to experience these things and it's a blessing to be able to share them.
Yes, to be able to share them and to share them so openly. In doing the runs there and extracting from some of the question and answer that you mentioned from the audience themselves, was there anything that you had to change or you said, wow, that's really enlightening and had to be put into the show?
Yeah, audiences wanted to know more about how I forgave. That was the most frequent question. They were like, we love the story. We love the humor. It's incredible, these things you've done. But you speak with these people with such love still. Why is that? And I was like, I do love them. I still have love for them. It's unfortunate that no one was able to be the mother or the father that I needed, but I still have love for them. And it's important that we love people as they are and that we can't change them, you know, and we find peace with setting boundaries and moving forward by not continuing that generational trauma. So I was able to forgive because I know that I will never have a kid who is in foster care and I will never have a kid who can tell a story like this because it ends with me. And that it gives me strength enough to say, I do forgive you. It gives me some strength to look back and say, wow, I stopped that cycle. And that is a really powerful thing. I really aspire to spread that strength to people in the audience who also have struggled with family and identity and to tell them to look at yourself and understand that a lot of that has stopped with you. You're not doing the same things that your parents did. You're not continuing that legacy of trauma. And that is really something to celebrate.
So you mentioned before you were putting stuff in your little notebook on your phone, writing yourself notes. Was there a time when you sat down and said, you saw those notes, say, okay, I got to put this all together now and write a show? Was there, what was that
absolutely.
Process?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it really was just kind of like transferring that file to a Google Doc on my laptop and then like sitting down on my full keyboard and just letting it come out and just reflecting on what happened when I was 2, when I was 3, when I was 4, just going through every year of my life and trying to pinpoint which parts of the story were important to explain my presence. Because that's what I hear from people the most when I meet them or when they've known me for a long time and they haven't really learned about how I grew up, is that they're shocked to hear that I was a foster kid. They tell me that I'm so well-spoken and I seem so well-adjusted, and I appreciate those compliments. But really, I think it's because when you have to hold yourself accountable and raise yourself and decide what's right and wrong, you make decisions that stick firm. And I'm proud to say that I had good examples. I still had people in my life that showed me right from wrong and what real love and companionship was like. So when I sat down to write it, I went through those stories. I documented those relationships. I explained that process, but really the catalyst was in 2023, I booked a commercial with 23andMe. And when they tested my DNA and told me about my brother, that became really the crux of the information that I knew. And now I already have the story, basically. It honestly was fast. The first act was just my childhood. Mm-hmm. The second act is my terrible cop dad and me finding out about a new brother because I became a comedian and booked a commercial. If I never would have became a comedian, if I never would have chased my dreams, because I kept breaking those generational chains and that trauma and lived this free life, I was able to uncover more truth and find more of myself.
That must have been amazing, though. And let's explain that a little bit more for the audience. So you do the 23andMe and you discover through that process that you had a brother, a biological brother that never knew you had. Now, how did
A half-brother,
right. So your father was a father's son?
So I booked this commercial. I don't even have to audition for it. We filmed the commercial, and the commercial was about, they tested my DNA, and it was about my genetic predisposition. And then I get back from L.A. shooting this commercial. I'm back in New York, and my phone buzzes, and it says, hey, 23andMe, your family tree is ready. You want to load it up? I said, load it up, baby. What do I have to fear? And there it shows me that I have a brother named Anthony. And so I reach out to him on 23andMe. And I don't know, because I haven't had a relationship with my mom or my dad, I don't know whose son he could be. I don't know, you know, where he could come from. And so he writes me back and he's like, this is crazy. I know that I'm half black. I never met my dad, but, you know, I know my mom and my mom is white. And I was like, wow. Okay. Yeah. It inspired me more than ever.
To sit down and write about it.
To sit down and write about it and to acknowledge that I had, by virtue of following my dreams, found the family I've been looking for. My brother is incredible. He's in the Navy. He's come to a bunch of my comedy shows.
Wow.
When I wrote him back on 23andMe, he said, I'm I'm in Bahrain right now. I just told everybody on this military base about my brand new sister. We're all watching your comedy specials. They're crying. They're laughing. It feels like a birth. It's the most incredible thing I've ever experienced in my life. By virtue of seeking the truth, I have the family I've always wanted.
Hmm. Was it always going to be a full-length play on stage, one-woman show, or did you consider at one point as a stand-up piece?
I think I knew as soon as I started writing it. I think after I wrote the first paragraph, I remember thinking, or maybe even saying out loud, I'm writing a one-person show. It's happening.
There you go.
It's happening. Like, someone look, hey, I'm doing it. The thing I always wanted to do, I think it's happening right now.
Yeah.
But nobody was around. So then I was just like talking to myself, which is an important part.
No,
of
you process. Put the intention out there. That's important.
Absolutely.
Right? When you put the intention.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I knew that it was going to be a show, and I had just signed with new management. And so I started promoting, like, hey, I have this one woman show I'm doing. And he saw the flyer, my new manager, and he's like, what is this? And I was like, oh, it's just like this thing I started writing. It's just like my story. And so he came and he saw it, and the crowd was amazed. And I did my first Q&A. And that's when I noticed that nobody got up to leave. Nobody shifted at all in their seats. They were excited to talk about it more. They were feeling inspired. They were like, what is this? What are we even seeing? What's happening? You know? And I was like, I don't know. I'm saying it with them. I'm not sure. What parts did you like? Every time I would do it, I would do the Q&A and take notes.
Mm.
And people would stay throughout this entire year of doing this show around the world. No one has ever gotten up and left that Q&A. They sit there however many questions it takes, however late it gets. They want to hear more. They can't believe it. And that's when I knew that I had something really special.
Okay, so let's talk about where the show is going to be playing, how we can get tickets.
You guys can go to relativestrangershow.com, or you can follow me on Instagram at Chanel Ali. That's Chanel like the perfume, Ali like Muhammad. There's a link in my bio. It's September 17th through the 28th at the Soho Playhouse in New York City.
And performances go through Wednesday through Saturday. It says at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 5 p.m. And that begins Wednesday, September 17th. Okay. So I want to thank you very much to take the time and sit down and speak with me here on Curtain Call. It's been a true pleasure for me.
Thank you so much. It's been great to chat with you.
And that is the latest episode of Curtain Call, our theater podcast hosted and produced by Tom Candela. You can find it on our website, wjffradio.org. Just go to the navigation bar there at the top and click on the show's drop down. It's next to donate, by the way. And you'll see the podcast page and go and listen to this episode and all the episodes that Tom's put together for theater in our area and beyond. And while you're there, check out the link to the Lou Beach Community House Summer Jubilee. That's tomorrow. We hope to see you there. We're celebrating our 35th anniversary right there in Lou Beach at the Community House from 5 to 8. We've got live music from Lally and the Pops, Calla Sun, and a DJ set from Jason Tuga. There'll be beer, there'll be pizza, popcorn, and pretzels, all of the healthy food you could have. And it's all going to benefit Radio Catskill. We hope to have some fun with you tomorrow at the Lou Beach Community House tomorrow. That's just outside Livingston Manor. In the meantime, I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening and have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday if we don't see you tomorrow.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Scientists at Alphabet's Moonshot Factory tackle big, serious global problems, but their leader likes to show up on rollerblades, sometimes dressed as Gandalf.
It's also my way of trying to disarm people and remind them humor and silliness are very close to the wellsprings of creativity.
How Astro Teller leads scientists to their breakthroughs. Next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Hello, this is Thane Peterson, host of Living Jazz. Please join me this Saturday when Living Jazz will pay tribute to Andrew Hill, one of the greatest composers and pianists in the history of jazz. The playlist was chosen in conjunction with trumpeter Ron Horton, one of our local jazz luminaries who toured with Andrew Hill. That's Living Jazz pays tribute to Andrew Hill this Saturday at noon on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. Nice with sun and clouds today, high 71. Some clouds and sun tomorrow for the weekend, Saturday 73. Sunday cloudy, maybe a brief shower, but that threat of thunderstorms has moved off. Now just a 55% chance of showers. And next week looks to be pretty sunny, nice, and warm all through the week with highs in the mid to upper 70s. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville. Streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.